Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast brought to you by Kane's Tire in San Rafael. Kane's Tire has always had the lowest prices in Marin for 54 years. Today's guest joining us from Pittsburgh, where the Giants are in the middle of their road trip, John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle. And John, since the last time we spoke, you definitely picked up something that I didn't realize. You now know how to speak Japanese. According to the story I read, you were quoting Nori Aoki. Well, no, I'm just kidding. You were talking to his translator, I'm sure. But it was great. You were quoting Aoki in the story as the Giants lost in Pittsburgh. And they got him back off the DL, so that's something. At least that helps a team that has certainly been hurting lately.
Well, I thought he was a good guy to talk to last night after game one of the series in Pittsburgh. He just came off the DL, and the Giants were playing at the site where they just erupted for a 9-0 victory over Pittsburgh in the wild card game last October. And if you recall, Aoki was a Royal, and a day earlier spent some time in Oakland in that zany 12-inning win over the A's, in which the A's probably should have won. They had a 4-run lead in the eighth inning with Lester on the mound. But as we all know, the Royals struck gold and carried it all the way to the World Series, where they finally lost to the Giants in Game 7. So he had some interesting things to say about the importance of winning your division rather than getting in that craziness of a wild card game. And that's what the Giants are all about right now. You know, they're still behind the Dodgers, but the way they're playing, they really needed a pick-me-up. And, you know, that's why they've made a couple of trades here with the Reds. And it just seems that the wild card thing is so unpredictable. It seems like an easier gig to follow up on to win the division, because you're only looking at one team ahead of you. Where with the wild card, you know, the Pirates are just so good. And who knows what's going to happen with the other teams, including the Cubs. So this early in the pennant race, the Giants have to be looking at the division. But it's, you know, even that is a tough road.
We'll have more with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle right after this.
Hi, I'm Mark McElhone at Kane's Tire in San Rafael. If you want the lowest prices in Marin and the best service, call us at 453-2942. Kane's Tire, 1531 4th Street, where our prices beat Costco's prices every time.
The NL Central is so good this year. I mean, these teams, you got the St. Louis and Pittsburgh, and the Giants are on this road trip against the two best teams, really, in the National League. They're both from the Central. You know, Cubs are leading the wild card. And then there's the feeder team, the Reds, that are trading players, like you said, to the Giants. They get Mike Leake, and now they get Marlon Byrd. And let's talk about that deal as they traded a minor league pitcher. It seems like a nothing-to-lose proposition for San Francisco once again. And they get a guy with 19 home runs. I mean, this couldn't have happened at a better time. They were hurting so bad for an outfielder. So what do you think Byrd brings to the table?
Well, it seems like a no-brainer. They're not giving up much at all. A double-A pitcher who's maybe a middle-of-the-road prospect, and Steven Johnson, former sixth-round pick. But they're not paying much. They're paying about $500,000 of his $2 million remaining in his salary for the rest of the year. The Reds picking up 1.5, I was told. So from that regard, it's not much of an investment. In terms of a need, it's pretty drastic. This guy has 19 home runs, and Brandon Crawford has 19. He leads the team. This guy has, 68 home runs in the past 3 years? No Giant is close to that. I think Pence has the most, 56. You know, Pence is on the disabled list. We might not see him in the short term. Those oblique strains, they could go on for weeks and weeks, and they needed somebody now. They're looking at an outfield before Byrd arrives of guys who just weren't even part of the equation on opening day. Pagan is on the DL. Pence is on the DL. Aoki just came off from the DL. That's your starting outfield. And now Blanco, who was supposed to be the fourth guy, was your most experienced and best outfielder. So it was a huge need. And this guy is no defensive genius. This guy is no on-base percentage guy. But he's hitting in the 230s. His OBP is less than 300. But you know what? he gives the Giants a real hitter. I mean, they were hoping Madison Bumgarner could beat Marlon Byrd, but you can't use that guy every game. He's got to pitch once every 5 days too, right? So right. With Byrd, the Pirates are pitching lefties the next two out of three games. And that's where he does his best work, against lefties. He's not great against righties. He hasn't been great on the road. Cincinnati is a great hitter's park. And he hasn't been great in August. But this is a guy who has been on seven teams in 4 years. It seems everybody wants him at the trade deadline. 2 years ago, when the Pirates got to the postseason for the first time in two decades, this guy arrived in late August and was a big help. And he helped the Pirates get to the postseason. And that's what the Giants are hoping for now, a spark from this guy. Because he's kind of, he's obviously a rental player. He's the epitome of a rental player. And with the Dodgers getting Utley and the Giants missing out on Utley, this guy has more pop than Utley, and there's a definite need. You're not going to see him on base a lot, but every once in a while he's going to run into a fastball and hit it a long way.
There's a great contrast there, too. And the Giants wanted Utley. He ends up going to the Dodgers. But, I mean, this is a completely different deal. First of all, you'll have great stories from Byrd because, like you mentioned, the seven teams in 4 years, I think nine teams overall, he can turn around and say a story about every player on every team. Oh, I played with that guy. I played with that guy. Meanwhile, Utley, he's played for one team, the Phillies. That's it. So they're totally different type of guys. And Byrd's used to being a rental player, where Utley was saying all along he didn't want to get traded somewhere where he wasn't going to play a lot. I mean, he was kind of particular about that, where I don't know if Byrd cares. He just wants to contribute to a team. He doesn't mind getting traded somewhere, is the way it appears anyway.
Byrd was told he was traded, and 1 minute later he was elated and happy to take the next flight out to Pittsburgh. With Utley, it was a long, drawn-out process. He had the no-trade clause. He rejected a deal to the Giants, for multiple reasons. I was talking to Brandon Crawford, and Crawford and Utley have the same agent. They both went to UCLA. They've hit in the offseason in the past together. Baumgartner knows this guy, and he knows that Utley wants to go through every single detail before making a decision, and this was no exception. I think he realizes he might have more opportunity with the Dodgers because maybe the Giants second baseman is coming back from the DL before the Dodgers second baseman. I'm talking about Joe Panik and Howie Kendrick. And Kendrick is a free agent after the season, and Panik will be here for a long, long time, obviously. So maybe there's some thought of 2016 in LA, and that's where his roots are. And I kind of have a theory about Utley. He's from Marin County, and I've heard he's not from Marin County. He lives in Marin County in the off season. I've heard from several people that he truly protects his privacy. He doesn't even want people knowing he lives in Marin County in the off season. He just doesn't want to do interviews about it. Doesn't like talking about it. Just a private guy. And some people, unlike Brandon Crawford, who grew up in the Bay Area and loves playing for the Giants, some people don't like playing where they live in the off season, where they have roots, where they have a home. And I think Utley it might be one of them. And, that coupled with maybe a better opportunity down the road in L.A. was his, I think, mindset going to the Dodgers.
Yeah, the ultimate way to stick it to the team that that wanted you, though, is to go to the Dodgers, of all teams. But this, really strengthens the Giants as far as their depth. When they do get these players back, you mentioned Aoki is back. When Pence does come back and Pagan's in the lineup. And then you have Blanco and Byrd. So all of a sudden, you are way deeper than you were. And you'll have some good pinch hitters, which the Giants are really lacking. And for them to have to use Madison Bumgarner, it tells you a couple things. I mean, look how bad the bench is that you have to use a pitcher, but also look how good Bumgarner is that he can work as a pinch hitter. And the other day, Larry Kruger, who I really like listening to on KNBR, he went on a rant about that, saying that it was too risky for the Giants to be using Bumgarner as a pinch hitter. I totally disagree. I think, in that situation, Bruce Bochy pretty much had no choice. Maybe he had a choice, but he didn't feel comfortable about it. He doesn't want Bumgarner to get hurt, but you can't live life worrying about somebody always getting hurt. He was the best option. You're trying to win games in a pennant race. What did you think about Bumgarner as a pinch hitter, and what do you think going forward?
Well, I enjoyed watching him hit. Who doesn't? But you got to ask the questions. Do you let him hit? And if he gets on, do you run for him? Running the bases, he could pull a hamstring.
That's where it's more dangerous, right?
Ankle. Yeah, sure. I mean, swinging a bat, he could get hurt too. It's not something he does every day in life. This is a guy who never gets cheated on a swing and gives it all he has, and maybe he can tweak an oblique with that big, powerful swing of his. But on the other hand, this guy is so special, so different. He hasn't gotten hurt. He threw all those innings last year, tore it up in the postseason, and he definitely looks pretty good now. No effects, right? He's primed to do it again in October if his team helps him get there. So I say let him hit. There's less of a need now because, these two games that he pinch hit in St. Louis, Aoki was on the DL, Pence was on the roster but unavailable, so the bench was thin, and now you have Aoki, and you have Bird on the way. So that'll be rare that Bumgarner is going to get to the plate again in a pinch hitting situation. But if he's needed, I would say go for it, because it's not like a Lincecum or PV or some of these guys who might be a little older in their 30s. Who don't have the body type of a Bumgarner. I mean, he's a freaking god, isn't he? I mean,
exactly.
He doesn't get hurt. He does all these things that no other humans do. And why not let him go for it if it's going to win a game or two down the stretch?
Yeah, and he's got the power to hit home runs off the bench, which is something that you're looking for. And while we're talking about starting pitchers, and you've been covering baseball a long time, John, I don't know that you've ever seen a summer like this where a team has a rotation that's, kind of up in the air, like where you have these auditions seemingly going on the entire season. And one of them that's intriguing right now is Ryan Vogelsong. It seems like he has been auditioning for a starting role. He wants to be a starter as opposed to being in the bullpen. He'll do whatever it takes, and he's done a pretty good job as a reliever. But he's bouncing back and forth now. You got Mike Leake, who made the one start and then went on the DL, and I'm not sure how healthy he is. Maybe he can't run, but he can pitch. That's kind of confusing right now with the hamstring. So where do you see this rotation going from here? It seems like it's something that has to be evaluated week to week. How much stress does that put on Bruce Bochy and on Dave Rigetti?
Well, you wondered if I had seen a rotation like this before. Right away, I was thinking of 1989. I mean, that was a World Series team. But I remember Roger Craig, then the manager, was having tryouts on the eve of the postseason.
Wow.
With Rick Rushel and Don Robinson, Mike Kruko, Adley Hamaker, all these guys who were maybe on the downside of their careers and not in great health. And, they kind of squeaked by to that point. Great series against the Cubs, and then obviously got swept by the A's at the big series. But that was a team of much older guys. Yeah, the Giants have some older guys, but they have a young guy in his 20s, a rookie. He's 27, an older rookie, is Chris Heston. And he's not doing well right now. And maybe he's a guy who comes out of the rotation. This is a rotation that behind Bumgarner, it seems every week there's a different number two. And for a long time, it was Heston. He was maybe the second best starter behind Bumgarner. And PV has had his moments. The last couple starts have been iffy. But after coming off the DL, he was mostly good. Vogelsong was poor enough to get out of the rotation, and then once he got back in, he's been doing okay, especially in his last two starts. Ryan Vogelsong won his last two starts, and no other that's rare in this rotation, and he got the win in St. Louis, the only win on the trip so far. And So it's a funny thing because Bumgarner is the obvious ace, and there's really no other number two with Vogelsong, Kane, Peavy, and Heston, and Mike Leake is on deck, and we'll probably see him this weekend.
It's hard, too, because you can't just go with the hot hand like Bruce Bochy likes to do with a lineup. A guy hits a home run or he goes 3-for-4. You keep playing him. And in a rotation, even though Vogie's been hot, it's kind of hard to say, okay, I'm going to go with him for a while, because then you start to jumble it up and starters really need to get into their routine. And even though Vogie seems like the Rodney Dangerfield of this rotation, not getting the respect, you want to pretty much set it up, don't you? I mean, that has to be something that is on Bruce Bochy's mind every day.
Yeah, and I wouldn't touch Ryan Vogelsong right now. You talk about a lack of respect. And you know what? This guy has had an edge for a long time, long before he rejoined the Giants a few years back and became an all-star. I mean, that long journey that everybody knows about away from the major leagues. He was in Japan. He was flirting with different teams in the minors. And all that stuff has made him what he is today. And He's the last guy who's going to give up in that clubhouse, and he's always pushing forward. He's always overcoming what he might have been told, overcoming the rejections, including getting taken out of the rotation. It's not really in his DNA to say, okay, you know, I'll do it for the team. I'll be the greatest reliever you've had. It's like, no. I want to be good enough to get back in that rotation. And it's the kind of guy you want right now, the kind of guy you really need right now with the Giants. You know, his last two starts, I think it's 11 innings, one run. And he's not the problem. He's an asset. You know, Kane picked it up in his last start. And, you know, last thing Giants wanted to do was take him out of the rotation, given his track record, including in the postseason, and given his contract. I mean, let's be honest. And
right.
So I think Heston might be the odd man out here once Leake comes back. We'll know shortly, but that kid needs a break. He's made four starts in August, and only once has he reached the fifth inning. His pitch count is high. He hasn't been efficient. I think he's gone 19 innings, given up 19 hits and walked 13. I mean, that's not good for a team that's trying to be playoff bound. I think that kid needs a break. In the minor leagues, his whole career in the minors, you never pitch in September because their seasons end in August. And this is really the first time he's ever pitched in meaningful games in August. And you know, he hasn't even gotten to September when he usually shuts down his season. So I think he'll get a rest. I think he needs a rest. I could be wrong, but that's the way I view it.
Yeah, and you know, another 10 days or so here, then the rosters expand, and then you won't have to worry about burning out the bullpen because you'll have so many pitchers in there anyway. I mean, that's been an issue because some of these pitchers are not going deep enough into games. They're high pitch counts. And you know, the other guy I wonder about, too, because you have Tim Hudson, who went on a rehab assignment and was working on being a relief pitcher and trying to get used to that. What about Tim Lincecum? He's just kind of the lost guy. We haven't even heard his name lately. I wonder if he's going to contribute to this team.
Yeah, Hudson is with the team in Pittsburgh. Lincecum is not. So he's doing his rehab stuff back in Arizona. He's not being pushed to get back quickly, but to get back at all, I think, is the goal. He's not saying, I want to be a starter, I want to be a reliever. He's just trying to get back on the mound. Because if this is the end for Lincecum as a Giant, he would definitely not want to end it on the DL. He'd want to contribute. He'd want to do something that helps this team get to October, maybe even be involved in October, unlike last time. So I think it's all about maybe his legacy, his entire time, his career, his resume with San Francisco. If he's not going to be re-signed, and the only way he would is for a very cheap contract, but maybe he'll get an opportunity to be a starter in Seattle or another team, perhaps in Southern California, who knows. But by the way, I don't see him moving out of the West Coast because he just doesn't like the heat of so many of these other teams that have, you know, issues with heat in July and August. It's really incredible. The Giants, when they go on the road and then they come back and they feel the fresh air in their faces, SFO is just a literally breath of fresh air. So with Lincecum, I think it's a real slow process. And you know, throwing on the flat ground. Then he's going to have to get on the mound. Then he's going to have to face hitters. Then he's going to have simulated games. And they're really not counting on him now, but he'd sure like to be involved in the mix before this is over.
We'll get back to Pittsburgh and more from John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle after this. It was time for a new pair of snow skis, and I couldn't be happier with my decision to buy them at Demosport, where the experience was great, and I found out that they not only have skis, but they have snowboards and snow apparel. And for the summer, get ready with water skis, wakeboards, stand-up paddle boards, and all of your land sports needs like bikes and scooters, and can even get sunglasses there. Demosport, 1101 Francisco Boulevard in San Rafael. Call them at 415-454-3500. Demosport, committed to getting you the gear you need. The road trip has featured some great plays defensively and some not so great plays, but one that sticks in my mind, I think that I'm going to remember from this year. I thought it ranked well up there. And I know you didn't see this play live because you were joining this road trip in Pittsburgh, but in St. Louis, Juan Perez, who's kind of now a forgotten outfielder, but he made a tremendous catch on Piscotty at the wall where he climbed up the wall and he made a basket catch. And I tweeted about this. I said it was part Mays, part Griffey Sr., part Griffey Jr., part Matthews Jr., and part Spider-Man. I think I forgot Torrey Hunter because he also made a great catch like that. But this was the reason I said it was part all these different catches. It was unique. I mean, he improvised as he went back there. That was a pretty amazing catch. Where did you think that ranked as far as recent catches by Giants outfielders?
Well, the only thing he didn't do was barehanded. Then you could have said part Kevin Mitchell.
Right, you're right. That's right. I was waiting for that.
How does it rank? I don't know. It's the best catch of the year by a Giants outfielder. Maybe the best since Blanco made that diving catch to save the Kane perfect game.
Right.
Or you could name a number of Hunter Pence catches, including in the postseason. But this one was a number one highlight throughout the day on any of these highlight shows that you could name. And sure enough, the next day he's not in the lineup. and that's just the way it is, because maybe the Giants got healthier with Aoki and there wasn't a need for Perez. But he sure is a valuable commodity off the bench as a runner or defender, as we saw in the postseason last year. And whether they hold on to him, I imagine they will, and through the end of the month, and obviously throughout September with the expansion of the rosters. And as we learned last October, when they used so many rookies on the roster, that at that point they'll just use whoever is healthy, whoever is good, whoever can contribute. And he's got the speed and defensive ability to really be an asset in October.
Well, speaking of rookies, Kelby Tomlinson, he's been pretty good with a bat. With the glove, and I don't want to get on his case because he's been a shortstop. He's really learning how to play second base at the major league level, but there have been some shaky plays. There was one at AT&T Park where it looked like he was going to have a double play, and then he didn't even throw the ball. And then he had the play in Thursday night's game that Jake Peavy, he raised both of his arms. You could see it on the replay, and I'm sure you noticed it, because he was upset that Tomlinson broke the wrong way. It was bizarre. I don't think he saw the ball off the bat. He broke left. The ball was to his right. He didn't make the play. So it's definitely one of those where you say to yourself, okay, well, they're missing Joe Panik not only for his bat, but they miss him on defense because Tomlinson, he's got that learning curve going right now. So, how difficult is it for him?
Yeah, Tomlinson said he didn't see the ball. And as we all know, he does wear glasses. He says it doesn't affect him, doesn't hurt him. But in that regard, it just looked kind of amateurish when the ball was hit just to Jake Peavy's left, heading up the middle, and this guy kind of pulls an Aubrey Huff and darts the wrong way.
That's right.
And makes up for it nicely, makes a great bare hand up the middle and a quick throw. Remember, he's a shortstop, he's got a good arm, and they almost got him. But if he didn't break the right way, it would have been pretty easy. And that was a huge play because not only did the guy reach with an infield hit, but now you're facing the core of the Pittsburgh lineup, and PV's pitch count is getting bigger. And the very next play, Brandon Crawford made a beautiful play to get a force at second.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of no-look backhanded pass.
Yeah, that was great.
the flip throw to second base for the force. So there's always that. I mean, that guy is just having an incredible season all around, the best overall shortstop in the game. Defense, he's a nightly highlight reel, and on offense, you know, and like I said, he leads the team in homers, and who would have expected that? But with Tomlinson, it's they can't get panic back soon enough. He's hitting well into the 300s since he arrived, so that's been a plus. And, you know, he's got a real nice arm. He's got good range, but the footwork and the mechanics and just everything you need around the bag as a second baseman, like you said, he's kind of learning on the job as a natural shortstop. Totally different position. You're blinded as a second baseman. You don't see the runner. You don't see first base when you're taking a throw on a pivot where the shortstop has everything in front of him. He sees the throw from the second baseman. He sees the runner. He sees the first baseman getting in position. So it's a real big difference for a guy trying to move across the diamond, and it's kind of it's costly in some regard. But I guess it could be worse. You know, they could have a guy who doesn't hit either, but he's at least contributing offensively.
So you're telling me that with the bat, he's Superman, and defensively, he's probably more Clark Kent. Which, I mean, the first time I laid eyes on him and with those glasses, I'm going, that's Clark Kent. I mean, he looks so much like him, and I maintain that should be his nickname.
Yeah, and maybe he doesn't see as well at night. You know, it was a night game, and during the day, I think he's fine. He uses glasses day and night, you know, the Giants version of Eric Sogard.
Right.
But it's all new. It's all new here, so we're just trying to, you know, the fan base and the team trying to adjust to this new guy. I talked to Brandon Crawford about him. He said he's fine. A lot of people made a big deal of, you know, Crawford and panic being so tight as a unit on the field and with the learning curve with a new guy coming in. But Crawford is so good. He could adjust easily. Wherever the throw is, he's going to catch it, and he's going to make the perfect lead throws to Tomlinson at the bag, so I don't think that's an issue as much as Tomlinson working on his timing and footwork around the bag and watching the ball off the bat.
All right, John. Hey, this is pretty much a dream time for a baseball writer. I mean, you're in Pittsburgh, come back, the Giants are playing the Cubs, the Cardinals, they're in LA against the Dodgers. I mean, every one of these games, it's almost like the postseason, not only for the players, but for a writer, right?
Well, the team, the media, the fans, they've all been looking forward to this 8-series stretch of playing nothing but contenders, playing nothing but winning teams, playing nothing but teams that need to win every game, that's not going to use prospects to look toward next year. These are just teams that are fighting hard and they're hungry to get to October. And the Giants so far are 6-8 in those games. If they finish 500 during this stretch, I think they'd be elated. You know, then in September, the only team you play with a winning record is the Dodgers. Otherwise, it's the A's, it's the Reds, it's the three worst teams in the NL West over and over. So I think the Giants would be in great shape if they got to 500 at the end of this 8-series stretch. But that's no easy task. 500 is a very difficult thing against these teams at this point.
All right, well, we'll see how it works out. John, thanks a lot for joining us, and enjoy the weekend in Pittsburgh.
I will, Joe. Thanks. We'll see you next time, man.
That's John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle, who joins us every couple of weeks here on thesportsvirus.com. Join us again on Tuesday. The Giants will be back home at AT&T Park as they take on the Chicago Cubs. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin.